What makes someone risk their life for a complete stranger? One night on Interstate 5 near Tacoma, Abigail Marsh found herself facing backward in the fast lane after swerving to avoid a dog. As cars sped dangerously close, a man appeared, someone who might have seemed intimidating under normal circumstances with his gold jewelry and shaved head. Yet this stranger risked his life repeatedly, crossing the busy freeway to help her. He calmly fixed her car and guided them to safety, then disappeared without sharing his name or seeking recognition. This selfless act sparked a profound question that would shape Marsh's career. What drives extraordinary altruism? Through years of research, she discovered that altruism correlates strongly with the ability to recognize fearful faces, suggesting a neurological basis for compassion that might be the mirror opposite of psychopathy. This insight challenges our assumptions about human nature while offering hope that we can cultivate greater compassion in ourselves and society. Contrary to popular belief, research shows compassion for strangers is both powerful and common. Princeton psychologist Daniel Batson found that when volunteers watched Elaine receive painful electric shocks during a memory test, nearly two-thirds offered to take her place. Even with easy escape opportunities, over half still volunteered to help. While dozens of drivers passed Marsh on that dangerous highway, she needed only one compassionate person, and one did stop. This reflects a fundamental truth. Most people respond with compassion when directly confronted with another's distress. Our capacity for compassion stems from ancient neural pathways. When a fearful face reflects into an observer's eye, it triggers a cascade in the amygdala. This neural mirroring allows us to understand others' fear while creating physiological responses in our own bodies, forming the biological foundation of compassion. Psychopathy eliminates compassion from the brain. Though only 1 to 2% of Americans are psychopaths, they may account for up to 50% of violent criminals. The disorder is highly heritable, 70%, challenging assumptions that violent criminals necessarily come from abusive backgrounds. Gary Ridgway, the Green River Killer, exemplifies this condition. Despite a normal upbringing, he attempted murder at 14, stabbing a 6-year-old boy without motivation. He later became America's most prolific serial killer while appearing completely normal, making him particularly dangerous, unlike psychotic killers who can't distinguish fantasy from reality. James Blair's violence inhibition mechanism theory explains that normal humans respond to submission signals that inhibit aggression, but these appeasement displays don't affect psychopaths. Brain imaging reveals why. Children with psychopathic traits show no activation in their right amygdala when viewing fearful faces. Their brains don't register others' distress, explaining their inability to recognize fear and why witnessing suffering fails to inhibit their cruelty. 12-year-old Dylan seemed like childhood innocence personified, a polite, freckled boy from a cereal commercial. Yet beneath this charm lurked violent rages and threats against his parents, including once threatening his mother with a knife. This contrast exemplifies what Hervey Cleckley called the mask of sanity, the psychopath's ability to appear particularly agreeable while harboring dangerous tendencies. Dylan scored 24 points on the psychopathy checklist youth version, indicating significant psychopathic traits. The concept of psychopathic children makes many uncomfortable, as we view children as innocent. Yet, psychopathy invariably begins in childhood. Clinicians avoid the term psychopaths, instead using callous unemotional traits or conduct disorder with limited prosocial emotions. Testing revealed these children experience fear differently. When asked about strong emotions, children with psychopathic traits reported feeling fear only weakly and rarely, with some claiming they had never felt fear at all. Without an intact amygdala to coordinate responses to danger, they cannot recognize or respond appropriately to fear in themselves or others. If psychopathy follows a half-normal distribution, antipsychopaths likely exist at the opposite end, individuals with extraordinarily high capacity for caring. This mirrors research where face blindness is balanced by superface recognizers, Altruistic kidney donation exemplifies this extraordinary altruism. It carries a 1 in 3,000 death risk, 30 times higher than skydiving, with donors assuming all medical risks while recipients receive all benefits, contradicting assumptions about human selfishness. Brain scans revealed these anti-psychopaths show heightened amygdala responses to fearful faces, the exact opposite pattern seen in psychopaths. When compared with controls, both groups were equally generous toward close relationships, but diverged dramatically as social distance increased. At the most distant relationship, controls sacrificed about $23 for strangers, while altruists sacrificed more than twice as much, $46. Why do we feel profound sentiment for vulnerable creatures? The answer lies in our evolutionary history. While loggerhead turtles trace their lineage back 200 million years, humans faced a reproductive challenge: eggs too large for their bodies or very small eggs with undeveloped offspring. The solution was milk, mothers dissolving their own tissue to nourish young. This adaptation required a powerful motivational tether: love. Love emerged as the essential companion to milk production, compelling mothers to remain close to offspring, finding their presence reinforcing and feeling longing when separated. This maternal bond became the template for all forms of caring. Once the proto-mammalian brain developed the capacity to care about beings outside itself, other forms of love could emerge. Research across 24 primate species found that allomothering, caring for young that aren't our own, was the strongest predictor of altruistic behavior, more significant than brain size or social complexity. This explains why fearful expressions trigger altruism. They appear more infant-like, with wide eyes, high brows, and rounded features. The amygdala serves as the entry point into our parental care system, while oxytocin transforms our response to others' distress, promoting empathy and inhibiting avoidance in favor of approach and care. Humans aren't fundamentally selfish. We possess neural tools for genuine concern. Despite headline-grabbing atrocities, kindness prevails. The World Giving Index shows over half the global population helps strangers monthly, while billions donate and volunteer. American charitable giving has tripled per capita since 1975. Violence has steadily decreased for centuries, with European homicide rates now just 1/50th of medieval levels. Practices like slavery and torture, once commonplace, are nearly extinct. Yet most people believe humans are selfish and society is deteriorating due to our brain's negativity bias. Individualist cultures often promote greater altruism towards strangers, ranking higher on giving indices and showing increased donations to unknown recipients. Literacy has expanded compassion. Books, particularly fiction, serve as the mind's flight simulator, allowing readers to explore others' emotional landscapes and better identify emotions. The joy of altruism creates a virtuous cycle where small acts of giving lead to larger ones. Many extraordinary altruists began with smaller acts before graduating to exceptional generosity. The final ingredient is humility, seeing oneself as equal to others. Your brain contains ancient compassion pathways waiting to be activated. Each kind response strengthens these neural networks. The capacity for extraordinary altruism exists within us all as the natural expression of our mammalian heritage.